Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and welcome to the very first ever Wednesday edition of Coffee Over Suicide. That's right, starting today, right now, this podcast is going twice a week. So you'll be getting a Wednesday show and you'll be getting a Friday show. It's very exciting for me. I don't know how it is for you. I have got so many conversations stored up that I just can't wait for you to hear. And today is one of those conversations. Today I am talking to Joel Hawbaker. He has got an intense story, but yet he's a Southern gentleman. And so this episode is the very first Coffee Over Suicide that has absolutely no cursing in it. That's right. Some said it couldn't be done. But you can have conversations about anything. What am I talking about? I'm going to be honest with you. My brain is a little fried. And I've been working on trying to cut down and meditate and keep myself in balance because I've been feeling out of sorts and I'm not really 100% sure what to do about it. I kind of feel like the coping mechanisms and the tools that I've got right now are the ones that I've always used in these kinds of situations. And for some reason, they're just not serving me at the moment. And I don't know why that is. And because it's what I know how to use and what I know how to do, I'm not sure what else to do. So there's that. My therapist is out for a little while, so I'm kind of on my own, digging in, and I've been really, really, really overwhelmed with a lot of positive things, but not all of it. But that's a whole other bucket of syrup. It's been a challenge. I'm not going to lie. I'm in the middle of a challenge right now. But the thing about that that I love is that I am pushing really hard. Really hard. And I'm not going to be pushing this hard forever. Because I want something that to me is really special, and I'm willing to push real hard and work for it to get it. I'm not even what you would call a particularly driven person, except for when I have a passion. You know, I'll just gnaw on it like a dog with a bone. And I'm really passionate about this, so I've been working myself kind of to insanity, which is an irony that is not lost on me, believe me. But, you know, I've heard it said that if you want to live like nobody else, then you got to be willing to do what nobody else is willing to do. And nobody's going to put in this work but me. It's the same with all of my other struggles, with everything that I deal with in my day-to-day life. No one is going to do those things for me. No one's going to make me get out of bed. No one's going to make me comb my hair. No one's going to make me go into work. No one's going to make me do anything. It's all about choices. It's all about choices. And I have to remind myself of that on a regular basis, that this is what I'm choosing. And I need to start advocating for myself in some areas, and there's no doubt about that. But that said, I think for the most part, I'm taking care of myself. Maybe. But I'll tell you this. The conversation that we have in this episode is kind of all over the map. We have some laughs. We jerk some tears. So let's get into it. Let's talk to Joel. So, hey, right out of the gate, how are things?
Things are good. Thank you. Things are good here. School starts back next week, so I've been doing some prep for that.
Yeah.
You know, continuing to work on putting together information for a an online course that I'll be rolling out soon, and also putting together specifics for a coaching program that I'm rolling out soon.
Nice. So tell me a little bit about that. How did you first decide that you wanted to get into the world of coaching?
Well, it's something that's come up a few times over the past couple of years. I've been doing professional speaking for about a year and a half. I'm a high school teacher in my day job. Mm-hmm. And about almost 2 years ago, I started doing professional speaking. And I wasn't really sure which topic. I've got three big topics that I am passionate about. And the one that I've really been focusing on for the past 6 or 8 months is blended or step family life. And the reason I'm so passionate about that is that's my life. I'm divorced and remarried.
Yeah.
And my ex-wife is also divorced and remarried. And we live about a mile and a half apart from each other in a very small town where everybody knows everybody. And so we've worked really hard to get along well. The kids' step-parents have both worked really hard for everybody to get along well. And I talk with people all the time about our situation, and the most common reaction I get is, wow, that's really unusual for you guys to get along that well. It's really unusual for you guys to work together that well. How did you do that? And so I thought, well, if in this tiny town that many people are asking this question, how many more people need that kind of help? How many more people need some kind of support and guidance? And so that's, you know, as a teacher, I thought, well, hey, I would love to help other people try to do what we've done. And that's not to say it's all, you know, rainbows and unicorns and stuff.
Right.
Like, we still have our disagreements.
Sure.
But our, you know, our disagreements are less ugly than most of the ones I've heard about. In fact, I'd say we haven't really had big, ugly disagreements in a while, which I'm really thankful for. And our cooperation is it's very unusual. So just a quick example, our older daughter is 15. And so in the past 2 months, she has gotten her first job as a lifeguard. She has gotten her driver's permit, and she has gotten an iPhone, all around the same sort of time period.
And that's a lot.
It's a lot. And in addition to all that, she has expressed interest in starting to date, because we've never allowed her to do that before. And so about a couple weeks after school got out, a couple weeks after her birthday, all four parents got together for what ended up being a 2-hour-plus family conference to talk about the specifics of what is and is not going to be allowed at each house in terms of dating and boys and texting and time frames and all of those things.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, there were parts of it that were uncomfortable and parts of it where we didn't all agree. But ultimately, after 2 hours, we were able to come to some really helpful agreements, including some of what the 15-year-old wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and
but the good thing on something like that is that, you know, you all have to recognize after a certain point that your personal things aside, you're all now in service of trying to be parents to this child. And so regardless of how you might feel about each other for any reason, it's all about the kids.
It is. And that's the thing is, everybody knows that intellectually.
Yes.
It's really hard to remember that when it gets into the sticky, ugly disagreement part of that. And that's just the older daughter. We've also got a 12-year-old daughter. And then at my ex-wife's house, she and her husband have a soon-to-be 4-year-old little boy.
Yeah.
So the girls go back and forth pretty much each week. So we've got two over here, and they've got three over there. And it's just, you know, it's complicated.
Yes. Yeah, completely. I have sort of a similar situation. I got divorced, I guess, probably about 10 years ago now. We got two kids, and it was just one of those things where we really had to make it work. And then after a bit, it I was moving to Colorado. And wow. So it was like, all right, how do we make this work?
Right.
So for the longest time, the kids were back in Michigan. And
oh, wow.
Thanks to technology, we can talk a lot. We can see each other. We can Skype. And then, we can see each other over the summers, like face-to-face and sometimes Christmases and things like that. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
But it still gets to be somewhat of a challenge when you're trying to take a unit that was once one thing, and now it's five things, it's six things, it's all of these people.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
that
but
is.
But in
that
going
could be
back on all of that, where did you grow up?
I grew up actually in the town that we live in. It's a small town in Alabama called Anniston.
Nice.
Yeah, population is right around 20,000. 20 to 25,000, so pretty small.
Yeah.
And we're about halfway between Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia. So if that gives people reference for where we are. I grew up here and moved away for college, spent a semester in England while I was in college. That was awesome. And then after I graduated, my wife and I moved to North Carolina where her parents lived, and I lived and taught there for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then we moved back here when my dad got sick. Mm-hmm. And I've been in Anniston since then. So for most of my 36 years, this place has been home. My wife is from here. My ex-wife, grew up here till she was in, I guess, late elementary school before her parents moved to North Carolina.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of, her parents have moved back here since then. She lives next door to her parents, a mile and a half away from where I'm sitting. And so most of our, my wife's parents live a mile and a half the other direction, 2 miles the other direction. So most of our family is here.
Yeah. I would imagine that would make things difficult sometimes with regards to, your personal issues or personal growth or, just having your business out there because everybody knows everybody.
It is. Honestly, it's both. On the one hand, it's difficult because everybody knows everybody. And certainly some things that you would prefer to keep private become public even if you don't want them to. On the other hand, it's forced a lot more personal growth.
Yeah.
Because you can't hide from things. Like, it would be easy if I lived in a different town, even in the same state, or if I lived in a different state, it would be easy to just not have to deal with some of the issues from the past.
No, absolutely.
On the other hand, there's a lot of positives in living here because we have a lot of help with the kids.
Sure.
Because, again, they've got, 47 grandparents or whatever it is now. And they've got a lot of people that love them and a lot of people that love on them. And so there's a lot of positives about living in a small town as well. It's like, for example, the school my kids go to, it's the same high school I graduated from. It's the same high school I taught at for a few years.
Yeah.
And so some of the teachers that have taught my kids taught me. And that's kind of fun. It's not always great because sometimes those teachers tell stories from me as a teenager, and that's less good. There's a really awful senior portrait up in the school office where I had blonde frosted tips.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was the boy band era in the late 90s when I graduated in 2000. Had sideburns down to my chin, that's
absolutely
not a good thing. My kid has to walk past that every day. Both of them do, and they just kind of hang their heads. And I'm like, well, one day you'll look at your senior portraits and you'll be ashamed too. So
oh, yeah.
It's fine.
All your friends' parents look just the same.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
But there's a strong sense of community that I would imagine is pretty helpful for, people kind of watching out for each other if somebody's kind of out of bounds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that's been great is a lot of the, I don't teach at that same high school anymore. I teach about 45 minutes away. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people that teach my daughter are friends of mine. The pastor where I go to church is one of her Bible teachers.
Yeah.
Right? Another guy that comes to church with us is going to be her Bible teacher this year, and one of them has taught or is going to teach one of their history classes, and another guy that goes to our church is going to be another one of the history teachers there, and one of the ladies that has been one of the guidance counselors, I graduated with her daughter 17, 19 years ago now, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, so these people have known my daughters since before they were even school age. And so there very much is a strong sense of, like you mentioned, community and people watching out for each other and not watching out for each other in like the, I'm going to rat on you to your parents if you do something bad.
Sure.
But in a genuine, a genuine loving, hey, listen, we know your dad, we know your mom, we know your step parents, and we're looking out for you too. If you need something, come find us. If you get into trouble, we're going to help you. We are going to tell your parents, but we are also going to help you.
Yeah.
You know?
But I imagine that would be something that would come in real handy. Like you had mentioned that your dad got sick. I imagine the community would rally around that.
Yeah, it did. It was very helpful. Dad was a Vietnam vet, and he got diagnosed with a specific type of cancer that is relatively rare, pretty aggressive, and it has been tied to Agent Orange.
Yeah.
So when he got diagnosed, it was already stage 4, and the doctors gave him about 18 months, and that's about how much time he had.
Yeah.
Before he finally passed away. When he got diagnosed, I mean, my parents have been divorced since I was in middle school, but mom helped take care of him. And when dad moved to Chattanooga to get some better cancer treatments up there, mom moved up there to help take care of him as well. That's where my brother lived. My sister moved up there with him to like live with him and take care of him all the way, you know, up through his death. But we also had lots of friends. Like when he first started doing cancer treatments, one of the guys that I had played high school sports with and that my older brother had played travel sports with had been in business with my dad for a while. And so he was one of the ones that would come over and check on dad or drive him to treatments if none of us were around. Because when dad first got sick, nobody lived here in Anniston with him.
Yeah.
Mom lived in Birmingham, and my brother lived in Chattanooga, and I lived in North Carolina. And so, yeah, we did. We had friends from church and you know, buddies from high school that would come and check on dad or take him to the doctor or bring him home. And it was because, you know, we had lived here for 20 years and everybody knew everybody and it was helpful to have people that cared about you. It didn't help that, you know, pretty much everybody loved dad. He was one of those guys that, when you're his kid, he was very strict. And if you were friends with his kid, he was pretty strict, but he was also very much willing to go out of his way to help anybody at any time. And to this day, I will go places and I'll walk in and people say, "Oh, hey, are you John Hallbaker's kid?" Because Hallbaker's not a common name. In a town of 20,000 people,
right,
like, we're the only ones. If you meet a Hallbaker, they're me and my family. Like, that's it. And so I'll introduce myself and, "Oh, yeah, I knew your dad. I worked with him 15 years ago on the downtown committee," or whatever the heck it was, you know, Boys and Girls Club stuff or things like that. I once met a guy who introduced himself to me at a church league softball game. I slid into second base after a double. And I stood up, and the umpire looked at me and he said, "Are you John Hallbaker's son?" This is 4 or 5 years after dad had passed away. I said, "Yes, sir. How did you know that?" And he goes, "I was wearing bumblebee striped socks with a softball uniform, like burgundy and gray." And he looked at me and said, "I've seen those socks before. There's no way two people that aren't related wear those same pair of socks." You're right. You know, and recently my kids have started getting that. One of my daughters went somewhere last week and someone said, "Are you John Hallbaker's granddaughter?" Like, and she just stopped and went, "Holy cow, are you kidding me?" I'm like, "Baby, get used to it."
Yeah.
It's going to be the rest of your life if you come to Anniston and say your last name. Like, people are going to know who you are, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
They're going to know who you are.
I have to imagine that had a possibility to be, you know, sort of a mixed blessing after his passing. I imagine that had to be kind of tough to begin with, and maybe sort of comforting at certain points.
Yeah, it was hard emotionally, but it was always very comforting. Like for me, my dad was my hero. I've got a bunch of his stuff that you can't see it, but over here behind me, and leaning in the corner is a old-fashioned cavalry saber that my mom gave to my dad as a wedding gift back in the 70s when they got married, because they were both in the military.
Yeah.
And so when he passed away, like, I kept that. In the other room, I've got a big shadow box with my dad's army medals and the flag from his, because he had a military honors funeral, you know. So I've got the folded flag with the shell casings in it from the 21 gun salute and all that kind of stuff. So it was hard after he passed away, but it was also comforting for people to know who dad was, because it meant that he wasn't forgotten and not just by me.
Yeah.
I'd say it's more of a mixed blessing for my kids on the negative side, because after their mom and I split up, people tend to choose sides, and they tend to choose sides on what they hear about why people split up, regardless of whether or not that's actually true.
Yeah.
And, people don't always ask questions. And
right.
It's, you know, and that's okay. Again,
a lot of people are more willing to talk about you than to you.
Yes. And the other thing is, too, unfortunately, that's exactly what you said is true. Most people won't come to you. And even if they do, if what you say contradicts what they think they know, they're not going to listen to it anyway.
Yeah.
And please don't hear me badmouthing my ex-wife. Like, I'm not doing that.
No, of course not.
But, you know, people pick sides.
Yeah.
And so there are times when, I've gone places and I've seen people that knew me and still know me, but kind of chose my ex-wife's side.
Yeah.
And they would, you catch some of these looks.
It's kind of a societal thing, you know, people definitely feel like they are required to pick a side on things.
Yeah, and in a town this small, that happens pretty quickly. Now, fortunately, it's been long enough in the past. And again, she's remarried and doing very well and happy, yeah. And I'm thrilled for her. And I'm remarried, and we're doing very well and happy, and she's happy for us.
Yeah.
And so we don't have that kind of thing. And fortunately, that has helped a lot of people who originally had kind of picked sides also kind of back off of that a little bit. It's much easier now. Because the thing is, we never did the whole, like, we're not going to talk with each other in public. Like, when our kids have sporting events or choir concerts or church functions or whatever it is, we're both going to be there, and we're going to talk with each other, and we may even sit together with all four parents. And that, like, if that's not okay with everybody else, we don't care about your opinion anymore. not that we cared about it a whole lot back then. But if you're still picking sides, like, that's your issue that you need to work through. We are fine with each other. And that's something that's really positive for our kids. So I'm very glad for that.
Yeah. But, I mean, it sounds like there's a series of issues there that would probably sideline somebody for a while. What was your process of dealing with the grief? Because both of those things, let's talk about them separately, because in a way they're both kind of going through a loss. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
even when you go through a divorce, which, you know, a divorce happens because two people just, you know, they're just not working anymore, and mm-hmm. it's irreconcilable. But you know, just because everybody is going to be happier in the long run doesn't mean that there's not a sense that, you know, of loss and pain. But if we could go back to your dad, that's a pretty mm-hmm. huge blow to be dealt. How old were you when that happened?
It was 11 years ago this month. So I was 25. And it was awful. I'll be honest. You could ask my ex-wife. My kids were real young. They're 15 and 12 now, so they were pretty young then.
Yeah.
But it was awful, and I became a much harsher person. I was already a bit in the mold of my dad in terms of very strict, very stern kind of parenting. Mm-hmm. I had already been probably harsher with my kids than I needed to be at their very young ages. And that made it much worse, because I was hurt at losing dad. I was also really, I've always been a very angry person.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, you know, that manifested itself a lot after dad died. And I know it increased strain on an already strained marriage. I know it led me to not be as gentle with the people around me as I should have been, whether that was in the classroom, the kids that I taught, or at home with my first wife and my kids. The anger was a lot. There was also some depression that came on. I talked with a counselor a couple times, but it was mostly about marriage stuff. I was on some depression medication for maybe a year or two before I worked through things, a year, year and a half, something like that.
Yeah.
And, my dad's death didn't lead to my marriage falling apart.
Right.
But it definitely may have sped the process up a little bit.
A catalyst, if you will.
A catalyst, or certainly a contributing factor in the sense of issues that I was already having, it exacerbated.
Yes,
And you know what I mean? And so then, you know, following the divorce, it was really hard, because at the time we split up. We had joint custody, but my ex-wife had primary placement. So she had the kids full-time. I got them every other weekend.
Yep, I'm familiar with that.
And that was really hard, because I was a harsh parent in some ways, but I loved my kids. I loved being around them. I loved seeing them. You know, I loved hearing their little feet pitter-patter to the front door when I got home from teaching or from soccer practice or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now, I'm living in an empty house that used to be full of people, because my ex, you know, like, when we first split up, I lived in my best friend's parents' basement for a month until my ex-wife could find a new place. And then when she moved out with the kids, I moved back into the house that we used to share together.
Yeah.
You know, and that,
you,
I mean,
were you a booze guy at all?
I would say yes, but I would say it with an asterisk. And what I mean by that is I don't drink a lot. I am a very, very lightweight.
Yeah, yeah.
I can have one beer and I'm fine. If yeah. I have two beers, I'm pretty much ready to go to sleep.
Yes.
Like the amount of times I've had more than two beers in a evening, mm-hmm. I can probably count on my hands.
Yeah.
Maybe even on one hand. But what happened is I became a consistent drinker. I would have to yeah. have a beer or two every single night.
Right.
And that was probably the case for a year, maybe more.
Sure. I think that the thing that happens with something like that, and the only reason I ask about it is because typically when you're dealing with something that big, mm. one of the things that people have to do is they've got to start compartmentalizing things, and they need yeah. a place to put all of that stuff. You know, it's yeah. like it's like catching the pain in your teeth with a stick when someone's setting a bone. You know, it's yeah. the same kind of thing. Only, you know, at the end of the day, you're giving the power of relaxation to that beer. At the end right. of the day, it's right. like this is the thing that's going to be the magic bullet, and right. because something has to be.
Yeah, I've got to find something that's going to help me relax. And so, and I've also, and for me specifically, like I had a lot of hours to fill because those would have been hours spent with my wife or helping with the kids or playing with the kids or, and so now I'm just, you know, hanging out by myself. And so, yeah, that became part of the routine. I watched a whole lot more TV. I ate a whole bunch of junk food. Oh, I put on probably 35-40 pounds, something yep. like that. And you can't tell because I'm sitting down, but I am only about 5'3". So for me to put on 40 pounds...
people will notice.
I blimped up. I got up to 100, almost 200 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, and again, at you know, hobbit height, like, that ain't good. that ain't good.
Yeah. A lot of second breakfast.
Oh my gosh, yes. A lot of second breakfast, a lot of 11sies. I mean, it was it was not a good situation. I can laugh at it now because it's 10 years in the past.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, but I do, like,
eat your feelings, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, it sounds kind of cheesy, but, like, that tendency is still there. Like, my wife knows, if I'm ticked about something, I want chips and salsa.
Yep.
Oh, that's what I want, or you know, or I want Taco Bell and a beer, or I want, you know what I really want? I want Jefferson's Buffalo Wings. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what I want. And whatever else is going on, if I can sit down for 30 minutes and just stuff my face while I'm watching some sport on TV, I'll feel better for that 30 minutes.
Sure.
I know that it won't help me in the long run, but for that 30 minutes, you know what I mean?
You know, sometimes short-term coping mechanisms are good enough because they'll get you through the moment, and all you need is to get through the moment. It's for the bigger things, like you were mentioning the you know, you went on medication for a little while, and then when you no longer needed the tool, mm-hmm. you put it away. Yeah. You didn't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, that tends to be the case. Is mm-hmm. you know, especially if you're dealing with a large grief that you're having a hard time getting around on your own.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a little help to get above the clouds.
Absolutely.
So you can see the problem well enough to kind of drag yourself through it. But how did you know to start putting yourself back together? Where did that come from?
For me specifically, a large part of it came from my faith. I'm a Christian mm-hmm. and have been a regular churchgoer my entire life. And even like the week after my now ex-wife and I separated, I went to an event at church. I went to a church picnic, and one of the guys that I knew there, his kids and our kids were pretty good buddies. He said, "What are you doing here?" "Coming to church." And he said, "Well, I know that." He said, "But why?" "Because this is where I need to be." And he said, "No, I'm not saying you shouldn't be here." And because it came across like he's going, "What are you doing here?" That's not what he meant.
Yeah.
He explained, which I appreciate. He said, "No, what I mean is a lot of people who just separated from their wives in a small town like this where everybody knows everything, a lot of people would be staying at home and keeping their head low and just waiting for it to blow over."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, that's not me." I said, if I can't go to church, if I'm not welcome here, where could I go? Like, where on earth would be better? You know what I mean? He goes, "No, yeah, you're exactly right. Like, we are glad that you're here. I'm just surprised because most people wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I had a good support group. You know, I had some good friends at the church, some good male friends. I had a good pastor. And my old high school soccer coach was also my youth leader. And again, in this tiny town, he was still working at that same church. And so as an adult, he's become one of my best friends. He's been a mentor ever since I was 14. So he and I spent a lot of time together. That was really helpful to me. And honestly, part of it was just the passage of time. I woke up one morning and I don't want to say one morning, but over the series of a couple mornings, realized that where I was could no longer be blamed on anybody else. Because that's what I'd been angry about, was I wanted to blame God. I wanted to blame my ex-wife. I wanted to blame anybody else in the world, because that meant it wasn't my fault.
Right.
And when I stopped trying to blame other people, that's when I was able to finally start moving forward. When I was able to take a good, you know, ugly, cold look at the mirror and say, okay, we got us into this. Where are we going to go from here? That's when things were able to start getting better. And it was a very long climb out. A large part of the help to me is the lady that I'm now married to.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned I'd gotten real heavy. I had known her family for years. When I was in high school, I was a lifeguard at the pool where my daughter is now working, right? Well, my wife now is the manager of that pool. So my kid is working for my wife, which is fun. But when I was in high school, I worked for her mom. I worked for my wife's mom. She was the manager there. So I've known them forever. But a couple years after my divorce, my now wife was home from college for the summer. And I had mentioned something in passing about, you know, I need to get back in shape, but I just don't like working out. I never have. Like, I played college soccer, and as soon as I was done playing college sports, I thought, I never want to run again.
Yeah.
I still like eating like I'm an athlete. I don't ever want to, you know. And so she said, well, hey, listen, I'll get up. I'll meet you at the gym. We'll go to work, or we'll go work out before you have to go to work. Because I had also gotten out of teaching for a couple years. And so for an entire summer, she, just because she was nice, got up at 4:45 in the morning, met me at the gym at 5. We'd work out for an hour or an hour and a half before I had to go to work at 7. And, you know, then she would go home and go back to bed or whatever she had to do the rest of the day, and I'd go to work, and it was fine. But over like a 2-month period, I dropped 40 pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, I looked better. I felt better. I was working a few different jobs. I worked as a construction worker and a cement pourer and a bartender. I worked with a financial consultant company and insurance sales. And then after that, I moved on and I was a shipping clerk at a manufacturing plant. I was a firefighter. And over a course of a couple doing lots of different things, I realized I hated all of that.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is go back to teaching.
But what do you think you were looking for?
Anything. Just anything that was different, because what I didn't want to do was try to go back to my old life.
So it was like it was like a way of trying to put the old self in the past and just move on from it.
Yeah, just be done with that part of my life. Like, it was fun. I enjoyed teaching and coaching, but now we're doing something else. And after 2 years of doing a million other things, I had a lot of great life experience.
Yeah.
I hated every one of those jobs for different reasons. Like, being a firefighter was a lot of fun, but the schedule was awful at the place where I worked. It was really hard, especially being a divorced person without getting to see my kids very much. That was really hard.
Yeah.
Just the schedule didn't work very well for me. And also, the single worst part about being a firefighter was fighting fires.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Not because it was scary. I just didn't like it. And it turns out, like, within the fire service, because I have the utmost respect for those guys. Don't get me wrong. Like, they work hard and they earn their money. But most of them that do it for a long time, they'll tell you, like, you either love this or it is not for you. Yeah. And I did it for about 8 or 9 months. I did it long enough to give it a really good, fair shake. And I realized, you know what? This is not for me.
Yeah.
And so I left on really good terms. Like, I'm still friends with a guy who was my fire chief over there. And that, you know, I'm glad for that. But I realized, like, I loved all the other. I would rather wash the truck or cut the grass or vacuum the floor than I would actually go fight a fire. Like, I got so irritated at being woken up at 3 a.m. to go put out a fire at another crack house.
Yeah.
Like, that was really frustrating. There was nothing fun about that.
Right.
You know, like, having to get called at 2 a.m. because there's a gunshot wound that needs to be taken care of. Like, that wasn't fun.
Yeah, what you can start to lose your faith in humanity a little bit when you start seeing the dark side of things too often. Well,
a little bit of that, but also, like, I just didn't like it. I didn't enjoy that part of it. Yeah. And again, a lot of the other guys did. They enjoyed the adrenaline rush. They enjoyed being able to help people in that way.
Right.
You know, and the way that I do that is very different. I like to help kids learn how to think better. That's why I've been a classroom teacher for 13 years. You know, I love teaching life lessons using... but the idea of, again, just being a firefighter, again, I realize it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to have learned it. Again, I'm glad for the life experience. I made some great friends that I still keep in touch with. And the other part that's been great is, except for me, every other firefighter I've ever met is really skilled with their hands. Many of them are very mechanically minded.
Right.
And so all of them either know someone or they themselves do things that you need to have in terms of the house. They do plumbing, they do electrical, they do roofing, they do cement, they do AC and heating. Like, and so anytime anything broke at my house, I would just text one of my firefighter buddies like, hey, who do I call about this?
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh yeah, call this guy. It's like, awesome, you're great, thank you. And I still do that. It's been like 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, because those guys are great. They're loyal and they're, you know, they're good people. And so again, I was very blessed to have a good support group to help me start moving forward. And that was really a key factor in being able to get beyond the pain, get beyond the depression. Because the thing is, I never could have been a firefighter had I not gotten back in shape. I would not have gotten back in shape if not for my now wife. You know, and so it was just dominoes starting to fall and things getting better over that period of time. So we worked out that summer. She went back to college. I started dating somebody else. Huge mistake, by the way. You know, moved on from there. She and I started dating 6.5, 7 years ago now. We got married just, you know, over 5 years ago now. And life's been very, very much better for that period of time. But in that, you know, in that 4 or 5 year window following Dad's death and the divorce, there was Dad's death, and then there was the divorce, and then the house that I lived in with my family I couldn't afford anymore, and so went into foreclosure.
Yeah.
And then we had a whole bunch of credit card debt, a lot of which I kept after the divorce, so I ended up going through bankruptcy, and so it was just boom, 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 boom. And then at the same time all that was happening, I'm doing all these different job changes, trying to find something that I like that can also pay the bills, because I'm also paying child support,
yeah,
you know, because of our custody situation. Like,
sure.
It was, and my kids go, so sorry to anybody from Anniston City Schools who listens to this, but like our public school system in this area is not the world's best.
Yeah.
And so our kids go to the private Christian school where I used to teach. Well, when I taught there, they got free tuition. I don't teach there anymore. So now, in addition to child support, we're also paying tuition for the kids.
Yes.
You know, and it was just brutal. You know, but God is faithful and He provides. And, family members stepped in and helped. My best friend's parents let me stay in their house for a month. They actually helped me pay my lawyer's fees for the bankruptcy. It's really expensive to declare bankruptcy, by the way, which is heavily ironic, but whatever, that's a different discussion.
Yeah.
You know, I could not have survived without the generosity of people like that. Like, my older brother ended up giving me a car at one point because mine broke and I couldn't drive to work, and he had an extra one. Actually, that's not true. He didn't have an extra one. He had two. And so he gave me one of his cars. Like, he and his wife had two vehicles. They gave me one. Like, I would not be where I am if not for the help and generosity of other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of the community aspect of all of that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that I tell to people, you know, when they're struggling with something, especially, you know, if they're not particularly religious people, it's like, you know, the one thing that, that church people have got over you, if you're not religious, is they've got community.
Right.
And you should
find... Or at least they're supposed to, if it's done right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what I urge people to do, you know, whatever faith they are, is find your people.
Right.
Find your people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, don't be afraid to lean on some people and be honest with people about how you're doing. Because people will surprise you if you give them a chance.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And that's something that we have seen even since, you know, my wife and I have been together, is people are, just like you said, people will step up if you give them the chance. People can be generous. They can be giving and caring. But a lot of times our pride gets in the way. Well, I don't need anybody's help. Well, okay.
Yeah.
You may be making your life harder than it has to be, but okay.
Sure. And, you know, maybe you can get through it on your own. But, you know, like you said, why make it more difficult than it has to be? And you'll find out some things about yourself when you learn how to accept help.
Right.
It is something that you do kind of have to learn.
Right.
You know, because it can be humbling, and you can find out what kind of person you are.
Yes, it absolutely is humbling. That's actually the key word that I use a lot when I speak. And I actually self-published a book last year about leadership, and the whole idea is it's gospel-centric servant leadership, and the whole idea is humility isn't pretending that you're bad at something when you're good at it. It's simply just not thinking about yourself. It's focusing on other people. It is putting their needs or desires above your own.
Yes.
And so that means a willingness to say, you know what, I do need help. Not because I'm putting my needs first, but because I am admitting I can't do this on my own. That's what I'm having to do. And I'm having to say, okay, I can't do this. I need your help. I need somebody that can provide what I am unable to do right now. Instead of saying, well, I don't need your help, or I can figure this out on my own, you know, just be willing, like you mentioned, be willing to ask for help and give people the opportunity to bless you by helping you, because you'll be able to help somebody else in the future. Like, there's no shortage of people that need help in the world, you know, so when someone helps you, great, turn around and bless somebody else by helping them too. You know, that's the thing. Instead of just saying, I don't need anybody's help, accept their help. Then you'll help somebody else.
Absolutely.
So that's
I think what you're doing is absolutely worthwhile and completely amazing, and I'm glad you're out there doing it.
Thank you. I feel very blessed because I know a lot of people who make a lot more money than I do, but they're miserable and they hate their job. Whereas I'm never going to be a millionaire, like teaching in a small Christian school in small town Alabama, and that's fine. But I love almost every day that I go to work. I say almost because freshmen are still freshmen sometimes. You know, but I feel very blessed to get to do things that I love. I coach my daughter's soccer team. I get to teach at a high school that doesn't have nearly as much red tape because it's a private school. I get to teach at a school where I get to teach Bible class and pray with my kids every day, which is big. You know, I get to go and help people in terms of blended families. I get to try to help them figure out how to make their family function in a more positive way. I know that the things I do every day make a difference.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful for that because not everybody gets to do those things, you know?
Well, not everybody learns the lessons that they should when they go through an ordeal like that. Not everybody gets the lesson. But you came out the other side with some tools that you're able to actually help some people. It's pretty wonderful when you can take something that's been tragic for you and turn it around into something that can be helpful to others.
Right.
It's pretty powerful stuff.
It is. Well, and that's something, again, I'm very thankful for, because that's something that I've learned from being a Christian for my whole life, is that, you know, we live in a fallen, broken world. There are parts of it that they just suck. They're awful. Yeah. Like pain and death and disease and sickness. And yes, those are horrible, horrible things, and they shouldn't exist. The world was not made for that. But the fall happened, and those things exist now. The good news is God's still in charge, and he can take whatever awful has happened, and he can use it ultimately for good, for you and for others. So I know that what I've been through helps me understand my students a lot better, because many of the kids I teach come from broken homes.
Yeah.
Many of the kids I teach come from divorce situations. A lot, because of the specific school where I teach, we are associated with it's called the Big Oak Ranch. It's basically called a Christian home for kids who need a chance. It's a lot of kids who have been abused or abandoned or both. And so a lot of the kids I teach come from really difficult backgrounds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the danger of teaching in a school like that is that for the kids, they see these Christian school teachers and they assume, well, he's been a Christian his whole life. He's got a great marriage. He doesn't have any idea where I'm coming from. He's never known hardship.
Yeah.
He's grown up in white, upper middle class, you know, suburban America, and he doesn't know anything about the difficulties of life. Well, I did grow up in white, suburban, middle-class America. That part's true. But like the pain of loss and going through divorce, and my parents went through divorce when I was in middle school. And
yeah.
Now I don't know exactly what you've been through. But when you talk about how hard it is because you left something you need at your mom's house and you're staying with your dad this week and they can't talk to each other for you to figure out when you can go back and get it, I know what you're dealing with. Not because my parents did that, but because my ex-wife and I had to deal with that.
Yes.
With our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I have a little bit of an inkling of where you're coming from. So if you want to come and find me during my planning period and sit down and talk because you're having a bad day, please come and find me and I'll be glad to listen because I can empathize with you. You know, and so it does. It allows me to do my job better because I can share my story a little bit with these kids and tell them, hey, I understand what it's like when your dad's not around. Not because mine left, but because my dad died. Like, I never even have the chance to see him again.
Yeah.
You know? And it's hard, and it hurts. But here's some things you can learn from that. You know, that kind of thing. And again, just it makes me thankful to be able to share some of those lessons with the kids that I teach, with the kids that I coach, obviously with our kids. It's not always smooth sailing. Everything's not perfect.
Yeah.
But I am very, very thankful to have learned what I've learned, and I feel very blessed to get to live the life that I lead. I feel very blessed to get to do things that I love and do things that make a difference for people. That's, you know, that's huge.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's absolutely a pleasure. It's I've been very fortunate in the past, like I said, year and a half, 2 years, to have been able to share different aspects of my story and what I've learned. And the goal of that is really just to try to help other people. If they're, you know, if any of your listeners are hearing this and they think, oh, okay, so somebody else knows what it's like where
yeah.
I am right now, then good. Like, God bless you, because yes. And if you need to get in touch with me, like, I would love to help you out however I can. You know, because that, like you said, like, that's what we're here to do. We can reach out and help other people, and people will surprise you. People will encourage you when you need it, and they'll step up and meet a need when they see it. And that's the whole, you know, that's the whole purpose. When I read the description of your show for the first time, I thought, oh man, that is awesome. Because it's something that people need. They need encouragement in a world where it's really easy to get, bogged down in the negativity and the darkness of what we see.
Yeah.
People need to know, no, it can get better.
Yeah.
It absolutely
And don't give
can
up.
Get, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Don't ever give up. That's the Jimmy Valvano speech, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just don't give up. Don't ever give up. And that's exactly it. So I'm glad you're doing what you're doing as well. I'm sure there are a lot of people that have been helped and encouraged by it. So that's awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sweet.
Thank you. And there it is, Wednesday edition number one. Out into the ether. I'm so excited about this. I am really appreciative of everyone taking this journey with me here. And if you want to take a journey with Joel, good news. You can find him everywhere. He's on Facebook as Real Life Leading. Also, joel.w.hawbaker. Real Life Leading on Twitter. You can find him on LinkedIn. You can go to reallifeleading.com. And as for me, I got some music stuff in the works. Really just trying to purge all of this nonsense and nastiness out of me into something positive and do something good with it. Because you can't always avoid the bad. Sometimes you just gotta put it to work for you. So until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.